As most of you know, maybe some of you know, my family is originally from Damascus, Syria, and I do still have relatives there. Let me start by saying that Syria is much more complicated than any news program that comes out. The media is not accurate, especially the mainstream media. There are conflicting reports about Syria, and it's hard to sift through some of this material. Now, a lot of what I have to say is pieced together, but in terms of actual detail, it's very difficult to give you specific details on specific issues. Nonetheless, I want you to know, first of all, that the left, the progressives, are split on Syria. And it's a big split, because those who feel that the situation is one of rights for the people, that is a reform movement, that it is looking for more democracy, which is absolutely true. Believe that then the regime is the culprit and nothing else matters. On the other hand, there are those on the left who understand that Syria is a very important strategic area, and that there are external actors who are manipulating the situation and who are trying to control Syria and to break the alliance between Syria, Iran, and Hezbollah, which has been called the Resistance Alliance. It obstructs Western and other interests in the area. And so those who believe that may be sympathetic with the reform movement, but they see the machinations of imperialism as the larger cause of this particular problem. And they see it especially because those external forces have been working with and have now clients within Syria itself that are part of the opposition, which then makes what the opposition is not always very clear. So I just wanted to put that out front, and I can tell you and assure you I am sympathetic with the Syrian people. My family is from Damascus. I was born here. I've been back to the homeland many times, and I am sympathetic with the desire to have more rights. I'm also upset about the role that the U.S. and other countries are playing in Syria, and in a sense have almost hijacked the reform movement to play it into their own terms. So let me just get that out front. Don't stop the clock yet. That was just introductory. So let me start by saying, and if I stand, I can't see my notes. Let me start by saying there are three things going on in Syria. The first is that it started out, and there still is, the idea of a movement for better human rights, better political rights, better economic rights, and certainly the economic situation in Syria had gotten worse because of the drought, and this is why you find a lot of rural people within the movement. So there's a reform movement. It started as a nonviolent movement. We have a member of the nonviolent movement here, and I'm glad to see him here, that he's not there. And so that's what it started out to be. However, there are two other things going on in Syria. Number one, there is the Saudi Qatar-Iran Cold War, which has now become a Sunni-Shia conflict. As some of you probably know, the Saudis have always been concerned about Iran and its growing weight in the area, especially after the failure of the Iraq War, which brought in a Shia government into Iraq, which cooperates with Iran and, as a matter of fact, is marketing some of Iran's oil, given the sanctions that have been imposed on Iran. So there is this Sunni-Shia, or if you want, Cold War Some people like to see it as interests colliding. Some people want to see it as a religious conflict. It's probably both. And in any case, that is going on. The Sunni factor is headed by Saudi Arabia and Qatar. They are pouring a lot of money into Syria, into the Free Syrian Army, and they are concerned about this alliance and about the dominance of Iran. After all, Iran is Shia. It's connected with Syria and Hezbollah and now Iraq. And you will remember that Saudi Arabia has on its eastern coast a large Shia population, and it has been demonstrating. But there are other demonstrations within Saudi Arabia itself. It's becoming unstable. You don't hear much about it because they shut it up. On the other hand, when Bahrain, when you had a Shia rebellion against the Sunni, but it was maybe because they wanted rights and it wasn't religious at first, it's been made religious. And the Saudis sent their army right in there to and the U.S. didn't say a word about this. So the Saudis are really, really concerned about this Shia arc dominated by Iran. And it is an obstruction for Saudi interests as well as for, we'll see, Western interests. And I will have a story to tell you about this in a minute. The third thing that's going on, of course, is a regional and international competition between the Western allies and Russia and China. And this is the fight over the strategic area. Russia not only has a base in Syria, but has vital interests in Iran, as does China. And they got sick and tired of the U.S. and the West having fooled them in the Security Council with regard to Libya, that it wasn't to just save people. It was really a NATO experience to control Libya. And they are not going to allow the Security Council to be used again to impose a Western response and control of the area. So it is that. I want to tell you a couple of stories in a minute, but well, let me tell them to you now. The Saudis went to Syria before the outbreak of the uprising. And they said to Syria, we want to have huge investments in Syria. You need money, and we want to invest in Syria. And said, fine, but the what you have to do is jettison your relationship with Iran. And Syria said no. Turkey, during the actual beginnings of the uprising, went to Syria. Remember, Erdogan went several times, and he said, you know, you need to have reforms, and as part of your reforms, you need to put some Muslim brothers into your government. And the government said no. And the Turkey's interest, of course, is that the Muslim brothers very much would come under the influence of Turkey. It isn't that the Muslim Brothers shouldn't play a role in Syria at some point. It is that right now the Turks are seeing it as the possibility of influence in Syria, which is important to them economically, by the way. So just leave you with those two things. Now, let me try to quickly get to, because the time goes by real fast. I want to remind you of an article that appeared in 2007 in the New Yorker. This is an article by Seymour Hersh called "The Redirection," and it was in March 2007. In this article, he writes about, and I'd like to read you a little excerpt from it. The fact that the Bush administration in 2007, after all efforts to weaken this alliance, I mean, this is a goal of the U.S. is to destroy this alliance so it doesn't obstruct its move to the east and its control over certain strategic areas and oil resource areas. And there were many attempts to break down this area. Let me quickly, before I read that, just remind you that Israel tried to break Hezbollah in 2006, didn't succeed. Any link in the alliance was seen as a domino effect. The sanctions on Iran have been in existence since the 1990s, and they have increased, presumably because of their nuclear program, which has nothing to do with it. And then the attempt was by the Obama administration to somehow have a dialogue with all these countries and to try to get Syria to actually turn to the U.S. Syria was looking for a deal on the Golan Heights, but the price that the U.S. was asking is that it break with Iran. And Syria said, Iran is my leverage. I am not breaking with Iran. I don't see the Golan Heights coming back in spite of all your promises in the past. And so they said no. So there were all these efforts. Now, by 2007, with a number of these efforts already having been passed, the redirection began. I mean, Seymour Hersh may not have everything absolutely accurate, but this article, I mean, he's one of the best investigative reporters around. And the redirection is to turn to an Islamic answer. An Islamic answer. This is the same that Israel did with regard to Hamas. When they had the first Intifada, Israel supported Hamas and helped prop it up in order to counter the secular PLO and the stronger PLO. And so we used the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when the Soviet Union was there. And so it's a formula that has been tried. We have been burnt by it, but we still keep using it. So under the Bush administration, this redirection began. And let me just read you a little something from this article. It says, to undermine Iran, which is predominantly Shiite, the Bush administration has decided, in effect, to reconfigure its priorities in the Middle East. In Lebanon, the administration has cooperated with Saudi Arabia's government, which is Sunni, in clandestine operations that are intended to weaken Hezbollah, the Shiite organization that is backed by Iran. The U.S. has also taken part in clandestine operations aimed at Iran and its ally Syria. A byproduct of these activities has been the bolstering of Sunni extremist groups that espouse a militant vision of Islam and are hostile to America and sympathetic to Al-Qaeda. Now, the Saudis in this Cold War, they are funding Salafis, the fundamentalists, the jihadists, and Al-Qaeda from Iraq is coming back. And in a sense, we're encouraging this at the same time we're scared of it. And it's playing with fire. And we'll see how the Obama administration thinks it's going to get out of this problem in a minute. But they're wrong. Also in that same year of 2007, there is an article by, almost a book, by Seth Wickes, W-I-K-A-S, published by WINIP, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which is the right arm, academic arm of AIPAC. And the article is called Battling the Lion of Damascus, Syria's Domestic Opposition and the Assad Regime. This was published in May of 2007, 2 months after the redirection. And in this, what he is basically saying, and let me just read you an excerpt from that, if I can find it. Don't go away, yeah. In this long piece, he is fitting into this redirection. He is saying, in Syria, the U.S. government would be better served by focusing its efforts on building stronger relationships with members of the opposition and bringing willing civil dissidents to the U.S. to speak with U.S. government officials about conditions within Syria. And he notes in the article that the U.S. had not been able to attract from within Syria some of the people who opposed the government, that they were very wary, and they didn't come. And he made recommendations about how to attract them. In any case, in the end, they went with Syrian expatriates in Washington and in Europe, especially France. And that became the Syrian National Council, which I'll get to in a minute. Let me finish this sentence by, it says, the U.S. government should carefully follow the manifestations of rising Islamism within Syria and how the Syrian government is reacting to them. In the short term, the domestic opposition remains a weak and cannot be seen as a vehicle for change, meaning American vehicle for change. But the U.S. can quietly assist the opposition's endeavors. U.S. engagement on Syria should focus on weakening Syria's allies, Iran and Russia, and convincing European and regional actors to isolate and pressure Syria to bring about a change in the regime's behavior. Now, that was the language of the Bush administration. Whenever I want to find out what the government might do in the Middle East, I usually read WINIP publications, because it's a forecast of what's to come. So with these two articles, I was already thinking in the Bush administration about using a kind of revival of Islamism in order to try to counter the Assad regime and to bring about a change and break this alliance that is obstructing Western interests in the area. Now, let me try to get to the opposition. I'm going to do two more things. One, I'm going to talk about who are the opposition, and number two, what scenario does the West and its allies see for Syria, and what are they trying to do about a transitional government? So let me get to those two things. All of you are familiar with the fact that we have something called the Friends of Syria, which are Western allies in a whole bunch of countries that basically want to see the Assad regime fall. And they meet periodically. And they support what is called the Syrian National Council. The Syrian National Council was actually made in Washington and in Europe, especially France. One of the chief spokesperson, without getting into all the personalities of these people, the chief spokesperson is Radwan Ziadeh in this country. And Radwan Ziadeh has held fellowships at Harvard in the U.S. Institute for Peace and so forth. And he writes for a forum called Fikra Forum. Fikra means thought in Arabic. Fikra Forum was set up by WINIP. It sponsors it, and this guy writes for him, as do a number of the people in the Syrian National Council. And recently, there was a breakaway from the council by a group calling themselves the Council of Syrian Revolutionaries, and that's headed by Haytham al-Malah, who was a known and respected human rights person who thought the Syrian Council would be good, but it isn't. And he's set up his own group and pulled away people from the Syrian National Council. And he wants to eventually set up a transitional government, and he hopes that it will initially start in Aleppo, or Halab, as it's called in Arabic. And the Radwan Ziadeh was asked to comment on that on Al Jazeera, and he said, well, he is a nice man, but, you know, he skirted around. Basically, he's saying he didn't consult anyone, and he can't just go around setting up a government. So let me leave that. There's also the National Coordinating Committee for Democratic Change, which is run by Manna, and that is in Syria. It has differed from the Syrian National Council in that it did not favor intervention, whereas the Syrian National Council constantly calls for intervention. And then there's the local coordinating committees, which were initially the major representatives of the reform movement. There were little committees in each city or town. And we don't know where that is standing now. Perhaps Najib can tell us. Now, the armed groups are the Free Syrian Army, allegedly made up of defectors. But we know that while there are a number of defectors, there are also a number of others, Salafists, jihadists, Al-Qaeda people who have come in, and some of the literature that's coming out from the alternative presses talking about the fact that, and even in the New York Times recently, they noted that the Salafis and the Al-Qaeda people have probably helped the rebels gain ground. They're better trained, and they are armed, and they know all about suicide bombs and so forth. They said 30 seconds. I didn't get to what's going to happen. All right, let me just leave that. So there are many militias, and the problem is they want Assad to leave, but the problem is there's a regime, and there is so many militias, and if Assad leaves and they don't have a transitional government that can steady situation, you are going to see a lot of bloodletting and revenge killing in Syria between these different groups. If you'll give me just 3 minutes, I will just briefly mention the solution and we can talk about it in question answer. As you know, there have been a number of, I didn't get the answer yes, but I assumed yes. I'm awful, I'm sorry. As you know, there have been a number of defectors of late. There are now, to date, there are 24 generals that have defected, and they are mostly in Turkey. And Turkey has set up this Adana Center. It's the city of Adana, where they're being, where there's training going on, arms being dispensed, and lots more heavier arms going into the area. The major defector, the ones they're all crazy about, is Manaf Glas. Manaf Glas is a brigadier general. He defected, and he went initially to Paris when the Friends of Syria were meeting. And we didn't hear a peep out of him. Right now, he's and people talk about him because he's Sunni. He was one of few Sunnis in the top ranks of the army. That he's Sunni and that he might be a good head. And the point is that the U.S. and the allies are looking for a transitional government where they can keep the regime intact, get rid of some of the elite security forces, but since the army is mostly Sunni, that this guy might resonate with them, and they'll surround him with other generals and some of the civilians that have defected, ambassadors, as well as from the Syrian National Council. That's what they're thinking. Can it be pulled off? I don't know, but Manaf Glas is in Saudi Arabia at the moment, or was a day or two ago. He met with the Saudis. He also went and was interviewed on Al Arabiya, which is the Saudi TV, and he also went and made the pilgrimage to Mecca. So he looks very holy. But he has blood on his hands, and it's I'm not sure that the Syrian people, who have fought so hard, the legitimate Syrian people who have fought hard to have freedom in Syria, will welcome this, or will they wake up to a nightmare in which the alliance is broken, they have this character as a kind of scarf. You know, in Egypt they have the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, which allowed an election and got Muslim Brothers, but took away the parliament and took away the constitution. It seems to me, and I have no proof, that this is what they're trying to do in Syria with this guy, is to set up the equivalent of SCAF and then have elections, and if Muslim Brothers and Salafis get elected to a parliament, well, they'll figure out a way to deal with that, but that the army would retain control, and the army is 70% Sunni. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I took so much of your time.